What's up, y'all? Welcome back to my podcast. From the title, you can tell that today we are going to be talking about the top 10 black romance movies, okay? Y'all, this was like so hard for me. Like, I had to pray. I had to meditate because I had, like, it's so hard to, like, numb down. It's so hard to, like, compile this list. Like, I mean, this is so crazy for you guys to expect this of me, but whatever. So today we're really gonna be talking about, you know, black romance movies. And the reason why is just because, like, during the coronavirus, I'm not booed up. I don't know about y'all, but I am not booed up. I have no boo. I have no bae. Okay. So my man is out there somewhere. God is still cooking him. And, you know, for many people, you know, we find comfort in watching movies, especially me. And so, you know, I said, might as well, you know, dig out the old black book and just look at throwback movies, look at relatively new movies, and just compile a list of the top 10 black romance movies. Y'all, you do not understand how hard this is. Oh, my God. But anyways, so we're going to get it popping. I'm not going to hold you long, but really, I want to just talk about these movies and just, like, give you my reason why I chose each movie, and like, because each movie is different. Even though a lot of these movies have a lot of similarities, each movie is different. Each movie has different, like, angles, like, teaches something different. And so I'm like, you know, why not? So let's just get into it. I hope you guys like it. And don't be coming for my movie selections, okay? And I guess I was going to wait to the end, but I'm thinking about going ahead and put this. I'm going to go ahead and tell y'all the movies that's not on my list, okay? So y'all go ahead, y'all can get that out your head right now. And some of these movies that are not on my list is mainly because either I've never watched them or I have watched them and I just don't like them. And if I don't like them, I'm not going to put them on the list. They might be great movies to other people, I just don't like them. So the first one is Love Jones. I don't know what it is about that movie. I love Lorenz Tate. I really do. I just don't like that movie. That's what Lorenz Tate and Nia Long, if I'm not mistaken. I've watched it like 3 or 4 times before in my life, but I just don't like that movie. I don't know what it is about it. I just don't like it. The other one is Brown Sugar. I don't like that movie. I don't understand. I don't know if it's the Taye Diggs, it's the Nia Lathan thing. I don't know what it is. And I know y'all gonna be on my neck, because a lot of times when people like bring up black movies, people always talking about Love Jones, and people always talking about Brown Sugar. And I don't know, I've watched both of those movies before. I just don't see what's so crazy about it. I don't know. One, I think it's Brown Sugar, that's about like the radio station or something. I haven't watched that movie in a long time because, like I said, I really don't like it like that, but I don't know what it is. I just don't like them. And then the other one is Jason's Lyric. I don't know what it is about that movie. I don't know what it is. I love my man, what's his name? Now I gotta look it up. I should have had this written down, y'all. I love my man Alan Payne, that's his name. I can't believe I forgot his name. I love him off of Blue Hill Avenue. That was one of my, like, my favorite movies growing up. But I just didn't like him in this. And, of course, I love Jada. I love Jada. No hate to Jada. I love her so much. But I just don't like the movie. I don't know what it is about it. Those are, like, the main movies that a lot of people talk about that that's not on my list, that I really don't really care for like that. And another one that's, I love the movies, I just didn't put it on here, is Best Man and Best Man Holiday. And I know y'all gonna be like, what the fuck? Like, why didn't she put Best Man and Best Man Holiday on my top 10? It's just because this is my preference. This is my list. And so even though while I love the Best Man and I do love the Best Man Holiday, it's not one of my favorite. Like, it didn't make the cut. And I know y'all probably gonna be hating on my movies and like, oh, she could have took that out and put Best Man in there. But I don't know. It's just something about Best Man. I think it's because it just got so many people in it. Like, it got Taye Diggs. It got my baby Morris Chestnut. It has got too many people in Nia Long. It has too many people in it. And a lot of my movies have a lot of people in it. But I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with me. But I just want you guys to know that I do love Best Man and I do love the Best Man Holiday. I just didn't think that for this purpose it should be in my top 10. That's just a little disclaimer because I don't want nobody trying to hate on me. All right. And y'all gotta realize top 10 is hard. It's hard to like to just scratch off movies. Like, I can't put you in here. I'm sorry, I love you. I can't put you in here. Like what? I'm so sorry. Okay, that's how I feel right now. Like, it was really hurting my heart. But I'm gonna go through this list, okay? Number one being the best movie, like the best movie, and number 10 being, for the list purposes, the least best. So 10 being the least, number one being the best. You know, that's normally how it goes. So we're gonna go ahead and get it popping, locking. And I'm just going to do a breakdown and just, like, tell you my views of each movie. Not really, like, a summary. I mean, if you watch black movies, you probably have watched all of these or some of these. And so, you probably know. So, we're going to start with top 10. So, top 10, I chose Think Like a Man. So, I know everybody have watched Think Like a Man. And this is mainly for 1 and 2, basically. So basically, I love Think Like a Man because it's a black rom-com, but it's really, I don't even know how to explain it. For me, it's really like, I feel like it covers all bases. Like, you have so much going on. You have different couples and they all got their own issue. And it's not only issues within the relationship, they all have their own personal issues and their own things that they each have to work out. And so that's what I also love. Of course, Kevin Hart is the main comedy, you know, the comic relief of it. But I do feel like Think Like a Man is like something that you could really, I feel like everybody can find themselves in one of those positions. Like, I feel like the movie sort of really covered most of the bases. Of course, it didn't cover everything, but I feel like everybody could find a place where they may fit in. And, you know, they came like, oh my God, like, I remember when I was with Johnny and, you know, he didn't want to get married and I really wanted to marry him. Or, you know, I'm so focused on my career right now, I'm just like very dominant and, you know, I have a hard time, you know, being, you know, a little more submissive or, you know, just really listening to my man. Or I'm a guy and I love sex. Like, I just can't commit to one person. I just can't do it. Or I'm not in the position to lay down my player days for one person. So that's the reason why I love Think Like a Man, because even though it has hella comedy in it, it is so like informational. Like, and it has like the mama's boy, it has a single mom, it has everything. Of course, y'all know the people that's in it: Kevin Hart, Megan Good, Michael Ealy, Taraji P. Henson, Regina Hall, Terrence J. I know I'm Gabrielle Union, Jerry Ferreira. It has so many people in it. And it's really, really good because I feel like it sort of shows the dynamic not only in between relationships, but also friendships, and how sometimes it is girls against boys. Sometimes girls get together and they come up as a, like, you know, as a group and like, you know, I'm gonna do this. Like, I'm gonna, like, you know, let's come up with a plan and let's teach our guy, you know, a lesson. Or let's do this or let's do that. And guys, you know, they're so oblivious. They catch on so motherfucking late. And so, but you know, they got their own stuff going on. And I like that it's some, like, I like how the movie was set up where it's sort of boys against girls. But they each have their own, like, you know, romantic relationship. And they each have their own problems. And they have their own end goal. And of course, it ends off great. Because it's one of those movies. It's lighthearted, you know, but that's why I chose it as my top 10. That's why it's number 10. But yeah, and I think it also shows that you're not going to find, like, everybody has an issue. No matter how perfect they seem, no matter how good they look, no matter, you know, their job or their occupation, everybody has, like, a downfall or, like, a negative, or not necessarily a negative, but just a spot that might not be so perfect that everybody needs to work on. So even when you're trying to correct your partner's problems, you got to take a look at yourself and sort of think about, dang, like, I'm getting all on his ass, but I got my own shit to deal with. So that's my top 10. Make sure y'all tell me what y'all think about these movies too. So My number 9 is How Stella Got Her Groove Back. It's crazy because me and my sister just watched this, like, the other day. And I actually like how Stella Got Her Groove Back. I think I liked it more back in the day when I sort of didn't understand it as much. Because now I understand it. Like, the movie is great, but I feel like the plot could have been a little better, especially towards the end. It was a little rushed at the end. But anyways, long story short, How Stella Got Her Groove Back is a great, great movie with Angela Bassett and Taye Diggs. And, of course, Whoopi Goldberg is in it as well. And I love this movie mainly because I feel like this is one of the main movies, black romance movies, that also dwells into the conversation of age and generation, and how two people, you know, from different generations, how their lives, you know, are on different tracks or at different stages, and how they can still make it work. And how another thing is also, I feel like it was a great movie because it also, like, showed how love is not so, I don't want to use permanent, but love is not so, like, it's not so easily attained. I feel like it takes a long time to find who you love. And some people, they get, you know, they found him on the spot. But for Stella, you know, she was divorced. She had a child. And, you know, here comes this 20-year-old, you know, passion-driven, you know, young boy. And she's 40. And so I feel like, you know, sometimes you get what you need in the moment. And if you're lucky, that thing can turn out to be what you need for a lifetime. And for Stella, it was. And I feel like it also, like, really targeted, you know, friendship. It targeted the closer moments, the more intimate moments of being with a partner, no matter their age, no matter, you know, any other factor, just being with them. And when I mean intimate, I don't mean sex. I mean just being with them and comforting them, especially when Whoopi Goldberg died in the movie. Taye Diggs was really, really there for her. And I really, really enjoyed that because it was for me, it was somebody who, you know, it was a one night stand, of course. Well, not really a one night stand. It was more of a couple of days, but I'm saying, you know, they met each other in Jamaica while she was on vacation and stuff like that. And, you know, she didn't really think much of it, but this one person that she just thought she was having fun with actually became a big part of her life and actually helped her through one of the hardest times that she was going through. And I feel like it also shows that nobody is invincible, and, you know, no matter how, you know, much people think they have their shit together, they can still fall apart. As which she did. And one of my favorite lines of the movie, and I don't remember, I just watched it, but I don't actually remember when it was. I believe it was when, I think they were in bed, and I think, I don't know what happened. I forgot what they were talking about, but Taye Diggs said to Angela Bassett, he said, "I'll do your worrying for you tonight." That's what he said. And to me, that was like, that just like hit me so hard. Because a lot of times men always want to, I feel like men want to do physical things. They want to have a physical solution to the problem. Oh, I'm sore. Okay, let me give you a massage. Oh, I'm late on a gas bill. Let me give you some money. Okay, if I'm late on the gas bill, you can give me some money. I ain't saying I'm not going to take it. But only thing I'm saying is that sometimes it's more of a mental fix and emotional fix than it always is physical. And I feel like that was something that she really needed. She needed a mental fix right then. And, you know, just by him being there and said, "I'm going to do your worrying for you tonight. You don't have to worry, you know. I'm going to take care of it. I'll take on your burdens. I'll take on all your emotions and all your thoughts. And you can just relax and you can just sleep." And for me, that was just the key, because I feel like if you have somebody that can mentally and emotionally connect with you, and, you know, not only say it, but really mean it, and you really feel relaxed after they say that, I feel like it's a connection that even the most physical connection cannot even compare to. And I guess the most physical connection is sex. And I feel like it was more of a mental thing that really got Angela you know, really connected to Taye Diggs. I mean, if you see in the movie, it's very dramatic when they have sex, and it's sort of like, you know, he knocked the cobwebs out of her or whatever. And, you know, that's a great thing, but I also like how it was more of an emotional thing and a more of a mental thing, and that age really didn't matter anymore. It's crazy because at first she thought that the only reason why it was okay for her to be seeing this 20-year-old dude was because it was just sex. But it actually became the reason why it was okay for her to see this 20-year-old dude was because they had a connection like no other. And, you know, he really understood her, and he had dreams, he had ambition, he had hope. He was not scared to stay in a job, or, you know, scared to not have a plan. And I feel like that's what she needed, and that actually motivated her to actually do what she really wanted to do. And so How Stella Got Her Groove Back is a great movie, and I feel like it's a great movie for all ages. So that was number 9. Number 8, what is my number 8? Hold on. Oh, number 8 is Two Can Play That Game. And it's crazy because when me and my two sisters, I have two sisters, Stephanie and Yakir, when we three get together, we always watch Two Can Play That Game. It is like our go-to movie for all three of us. And Two Can Play That Game, it has Vivica A. Fox, Morris Chestnut, Anthony Anderson, Monique, Tamala Jones, Wendy Raquel, and Gabrielle Union. I can't believe I forgot her. Yeah, so Two Can Play That Game is a really great movie. And the reason why I like it, and it sort of reminds me of Think Like a Man. Well, I guess Think Like a Man sort of reminds me of Two Can Play That Game. But it sort of reminds me of Think Like a Man because it's all about mind games. It's about, you know, controlling the other person, trying to yield the results you want, trying to bend them to your will. And it's really, really funny. But it also explores the relationships of four friends. Of course, the main one is Vivica A. Fox and Morris Chestnut. And after, you know, giving all these lessons and trying to help her friend, Vivica A. Fox realized that her relationship is not as perfect when, you know, Morris Chestnut seemingly or allegedly messes up by taking a co-worker out to dinner. And so she feels like that she has to punish him to get him to act right, when really he was the right person for her all along. And she, I feel like, everybody knew that she sort of took it out of proportion, and she did this 10-day process that was supposed to get him to act right, which really it just backfired. And I feel like by being in control and by having all these rules, it really didn't work out, I mean, as she thought it would. And sometimes it worked out and sometimes it doesn't, because in the character that Wendy Raquel, it supposedly worked out for her and Bobby Brown, and he ended up proposing after she finished her 10-day program. But for the creator of it, Vivica A. Fox couldn't even get it to work with her man. And I think it was because she was really overreacting. And I feel like this is just a lesson for everybody that, you know, you can't control somebody. You can't make them be somebody that they're not. If they're a good man, they're going to be a good man. If they're a bad man, they're probably going to be a bad man. Now, I don't know if a 10-day program is going to fix them being a bad man, but sometimes you doing all this to try to get your man to quote unquote act right, I feel like it can just send him in the other direction, because it's playing games, you know, doing this and doing that, and, you know, not returning his calls and breaking up with him, and, you know, trying to make him jealous and doing this and doing that. And I'm not trying to put it all on Vivica A. Fox, because Morris Chestnut was doing the most. He was flaunting around Gabrielle Union, who played a hoe in the movie, and he was dancing with other women, and he was playing right along with her. But in the end, I feel like it really showed that, you know, it really showed that they do love each other, and that no matter what, that he was always going to be there for her. And it was just a learning moment. And I feel like they're like, if it was a real story, I feel like at the end it would have shown them communicating more, and not always somebody has to have the upper hand. You know, it's a tit for tat type thing. And I feel like if you're in a relationship, if any of you are in a relationship where you feel like you're always doing a tit for tat, okay, he liked this girl's post, so I'ma send this dude some news, or I sent this dude some news, so he fucked this girl. You know, if it's always that tit for tat type thing, and that's, you know, really extreme, but even small stuff, you know, if it's always a tit for tat in your relationship, it don't matter how well you love him or how well he loves you, I feel like that's a really, really big problem, because it can go overboard. It can really get to the point where he can do something that is not even in the game anymore. Sort of like in the movie, when they were both playing this game, you know, flaunting other people around and not answering calls and not doing this and not doing that. And then once when Vivica A. Fox changed the script on him and brought a man to the to a party and basically, you know, dropped a condom on the ground and made the illusion that she was, you know, planning to have sex with this other guy. You know, Morris Chestnut was just like, you know, I'm over it. Like, this is, you know, if you go home with him, I'm going home with Gabrielle Union, and we just done. Like, it's really the done deal. So I really do feel like this tit for tat thing in real life is real. It's not always a fairy tale ending. A lot of times people don't realize, but a lot of times in relationships, people do have sex with other people because they're trying to get back at their boyfriend. But a lot of times that actually does backfire. A lot of times people end up getting STDs. A lot of times people may end up getting pregnant. Like, this is not a joke. And so I feel like this movie, as funny and as hilarious and as, like, you know, just like of a sort of like a mental break that it gave us while watching this, is also an important lesson that, you know, they were the lucky people because they didn't go too far, but tit for tat can end up in other ways. Number 7 is Why Did I Get Married? And so basically when I say why did I get married, I'm basically including both movies, technically, quote unquote, but I'm just using the first one as an example. So basically, Why Did I Get Married? I know every single line to this movie. I love it. Basically for me, I feel like I chose this as number 7 because it's an in-between. It's sort of almost, you know, at the midpoint. But for me, it really is enlightening. And I feel like it's a more serious take on Think Like a Man. I feel like these couples really have some deep-seated, deep-rooted issues that really needed to be worked out. And a lot of times, a lot of these issues within themselves that they brought to the relationship. So Why Did I Get Married? Let's take Mike and Sheila, for example. I mean, I don't know if they were considered the main couple, but they were all sort of equal. So Mike and Sheila, he was cheating on her with her friend. And basically he had an issue with her weight and she had an issue with her weight, and she allowed him to emotionally and mentally abuse her by degrading her, by, you know, just being really rude and making it seem like everything was her fault and that the weight was the issue of their relationship, and sort of basically getting himself off the hook by sleeping with her friend and stuff like that. And so I do feel like Sheila was one of the ones who came the furthest, because not only did, you know, she cleared him from her life, she was also able to love again, Troy. And so I do feel like a lot of times in relationships, even when something doesn't feel like it's over, a lot of times it's been over. If you are in a relationship where it's unhealthy, even if you don't know he's cheating or she's cheating, there's been signs, but you just ignored them. For one, when they were on the airplane to go to the marriage retreat, why did they bring the friend? First of all, this is a marriage retreat. I'm not going to bring my best friend, I don't care how close we are, onto a retreat for my marriage that I'm desperately trying to save. And another thing, even if I was to bring my friend, she's not going to be sitting beside him. I'm going to be sitting beside him. I don't care how much I weigh. So I feel like it was just little hints that Sheila didn't even pick up on because she didn't even think about it. And Angela, her friend Angela, she spotted it, and they all sort of spotted it, you know, right when they met the girl. Like, why is she here? Where is Sheila? And on top of that, he made her drive, you know, to the retreat. And so it's little things. Like, come on, y'all. Like, now this is the extreme. This is literally stuff that's right in your face that you should already know something is up, but it's other things, it's little things that's subtle. So take a look at your relationship. It's little things that are subtle that you might not notice, but you should notice. If you're paying enough attention, if you are looking for something, I know when people say you're looking for trouble, you're going to find it. So if you're looking for something wrong in your relationship, you're going to find it. And I'm not saying that that isn't true. That is true. But when you already have problems in your relationship and you ignore every single thing because you don't want to create more additional problems, you're just killing your relationship. You're not helping it. You're just basically taking a gun and putting the barrel towards your relationship and just shooting it. Because nothing, if a relationship is over, it's over. If a relationship is damaged, it's damaged. Ignoring it is not going to change the fact. And I feel like that's what Sheila realized, and she felt like she had things to work on for herself. And so when she was cleared of Mike, that's what she did, and she found love in the process. She found somebody who loved her with the weight, without the weight, with internal issues, without internal issues, that was on the journey with her, not putting her down along, you know, each step. So Angela and Marcus, their problem, you know, was clear that they had a lot of communication, a lot of trust issues. It was a lot of cheating going on. It was a lot of tit for tat, sort of like we were talking about, and two can play that game. It was a lot of tit for tat with Angela and Marcus. And I do feel like they realized that it could get really serious. And it did get really serious. Like I said, when I was talking about two can play that game, you know, a lot of times people do this tit for tat. They start cheating and stuff like that, and somebody gets an STD. So technically Angela had the STD when she cheated with somebody, and then she passed it on to Marcus. But Marcus ended up admitting that he had that he ended up cheating on Angela. And so he thought that he had the STD, that he was the first one to get it. And, you know, when she confessed and said, no, I cheated on you, I gave it to you. And I just feel like it's like, you know, it shows that relationships are what you make it. And if you're both comfortable in being in a relationship where there's no trust, where there's no communication, where there's no faithfulness, where there's no, you know, boundaries, where there's no respect, I feel like then, of course, it's going to, you know, you can stay in that relationship for years if y'all both come to those agreements. And I do feel like once when they had time, you know, to sort of breathe, I feel like they, you know, started to realize what's important to them. And the first thing that popped up was each other. So if you're in a relationship to where, you know, that's happening to you, or, you know, you just can't, you and your boyfriend just cannot seem, or you and your girlfriend, whoever, cannot see eye to eye with each other, I feel like one of the best things for you to do, I don't know all of your situations, but for me, the way I'm thinking, the best thing for you to do is sort of take a break. I don't mean break up. I mean sort of spend time away from each other, because time really does help you see clearly what's important to you. And when you're in the thick of it, it's hard for you to see that. When you're arguing with him every single day, when you're cheating on him, when you're texting other guys, when you're entertaining other girls, when you're doing this and doing that, it's hard for you to see because you're so wrapped up into his reaction, into her reaction, into, oh, I wonder what she's going to say about this, or I wonder what he's going to say about this. If you both just take a break and you can sort of just see what's important to you, then it might not necessarily be each other. It might be something else, but I feel like it'll help you understand why you guys are arguing. And why you guys are disrespecting each other, and it'll help you come to terms with where to go from there. And so that's what Angela and Marcus' relationship sort of symbolized for me. Of course, they were, you know, really, really funny, you know, with all these little clever little, you know, jabs and stabs at each other and stuff like that. But overall, I feel like that's what it really symbolized. Patty and Gavin, they really had a lot of issues, and of course their issues were more revealed in Why Did I Get Married 2 than Why Did I Get Married the first one. But technically everybody can see that Patty is somebody who feels like she has everything under control. She is a doctor, she's a psychiatrist, and so basically she feels like she has everything under control, and you know, she's dealt with all her emotions and she don't need to talk about it with anybody, including her husband Gavin. And they suffered a tragic loss, one of the most tragic losses that anybody can suffer. They lost a child. And so I feel like with that, communication barrier probably wasn't always the best, but it just totally broke down when they lost their child. And so I feel like that was something that was a big dynamic of their relationship, with, you know, not talking, you know, through stuff and not, you know, going to therapy or whatever, or just having a conversation with each other. Gavin really felt really left out of the marriage in general. And I mean, I really do feel like their relationship makes me cry, because I identify with Patty myself. Out of the four, was it four of them? Out of the four women, I identify with Patty the most. I identify with all of them, but mainly with Patty. And what was Diane? I also identify with Diane. I cannot remember her name, y'all. So, yeah. So, basically, it was just really sad because, of course, in the second movie, Gavin ends up dying after they go through, you know, they're going through the divorce or whatever, and they're doing this tit for tat thing, and she's finally showing emotion, but she's showing rage, she's showing anger, she's showing, you know, she's showing, you know, hate towards Gavin, and he's dishing it back out, and he's sort of just, you know, putting all his feelings out on the table and showing, you know, what she's been doing for all these years. And even in the first one, you know, Mike reveals at the dinner table and was like, you know, Gavin came to me crying, saying how could she be so stupid, you know, to not strap their son in, and that's how he died and stuff like that. And for me, I feel like it's just another thing about communication, and another thing about admitting when something is hurting you, when something is bothering you. Loss is hard for one person. So loss is definitely hard for two people to deal with. And so I feel like that was something that they didn't really stand a chance, because they didn't communicate. And I feel like Gavin did try more than she did, but she didn't want to admit to her pain. She didn't want to admit to her guilt. She didn't want to admit to, you know, their son, you know, dying, and it being her fault, it being his fault, it being whoever's fault it was. And I feel like that just shows the will, and that just shows how some people are so willing to just fake the funk, and how good they are at faking the funk, and how that affects their relationship. Because if somebody's willing to talk, if somebody needs to talk to their person about something, and the other one just sort of, you know, patronize them and sort of diminish their feelings and sort of just, you know, say they don't want to talk about it, that shutting somebody out like that, especially shutting your husband or your wife out after you've been through something like that, now that right there, that is the key to a disastrous marriage, a disastrous relationship. And the relationship can really go south. It can go south really, really fast. Of course, so the only one left to talk about is Diane and Terry. So basically, they have the relationship where they don't communicate as well. They both have promising careers, and they're both very, very professional people. And it's really about the duties of a woman, the duties of a man, and the duties of them together. And I feel like they didn't see eye to eye a lot of the times. Diane, she was mainly focused on her career, and, you know, she feels like she, you know, she had a daughter and she doesn't want any more kids, but Terry wants a son. So it's really just about compromise, really, and about things that they each did that should have been a conversation for two, but they just did it behind their back, you know. Terry getting a DNA test on the daughter, and Diane getting her tubes tied because she didn't want any more kids, and how she has to, you know, come up with a reason not to have sex, or she has to you know, come up with a reason why she's not getting pregnant because she tied her tubes, but he doesn't know. So, you know, that's just a whole nother thing about communications, you know, and compromise, and considering what the other partner wants. And so Why Not Get Married to me is just a amplified, a more serious, and a more in-depth, you know, really look at relationships, the all-American, the regular black relationships, and how no matter what the couple looks like on the outside, they're not, nobody is perfect. Everybody has issues, and you either fight to fix them and fight to, you know, be together, or you just fall away and y'all just break up. And sometimes breaking up can be the best thing for a relationship. So number six, I have Queen and Slim. So Queen and Slim, I watched this in the movie theaters with my sisters Stephanie and Yakira, and I have a lot of feelings revolved around, it's a lot of emotion, a lot of feelings revolved around this movie, because not only is it a romance movie, it's also a sort of a thriller or suspenseful movie, and it also deals with, you know, police brutality and justice and, you know, and just being out on the run. And so the reason why I put this as number six, and I know a lot of people really think this is one of the best black romance movies. I've heard people say this is the best black romance movies of all time. And to me, it really wasn't. When you think about the romance side, to me, it wasn't the best, but it is in top 10. Because I feel like it really shows how sometimes you can go through something with somebody, and even if you really didn't think that y'all were that connected or you really cared about him, you know, you and him, or you and her, whoever, can really become connected, and you guys can really have a connection that nobody can break after you go through something serious. Me, I'm a big movie buff. I'm a big TV show buff. I watched countless of movies and countless of shows, and I know how it goes. Somebody goes through something tragic or something, you know, traumatic, and somebody is there for them, and then they turn towards them, and then they end up falling in love or whatever. But in Queen and Slim, I feel like they took various roads to get towards the end point, which is being in love. And for me, I think it was more about, they loved each other, but I feel like for me, it was a lot about respect. I feel like they ended up gaining a lot of respect for each other. And I also feel like, I don't know the feeling because I've never been in that situation, but I do feel like it is a feeling other than just love that they felt for each other. Because when you're on the run with somebody and you have to put all your trust in them, and you have to come to an agreement with each other, we're in this together. No matter what happens, we're in this together. It's you and me literally against the world. A lot of people say that, but nobody really knows until it's definitely true, until cops and, you know, detectives are literally chasing you across the country to try to hunt you down. Nobody really knows that feeling, especially, you know, to be with a stranger. If it's somebody that you already know and love, then your love probably, you know, grows a little bit. But when it's somebody that you didn't really know at all, you know, your love is going to grow. It's going to be more of, to me, it's going to be more of, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. For me, it's love, but I'm not saying that that's not real love. I'm not trying to say that, but I just feel like, okay, this may sound weird, but you know how people say, like, at the, you know, when the world's coming to an end, and they have sex with everybody or whatever, or they have sex with people, have sex with the last person on earth or whatever. It's just that feeling of doing something, of, you know, feeling something for somebody. When you're, you know, if you're about to go down, if you're in a building and the building's on fire and you're about to go down, the building's, you're about to die, you will feel love and you will feel gratification, and you'll feel, you know, I guess brothership and sistership with that person you're with, because you're going through it together. I think that's what I'm trying to say. And so that's what I felt like with Queen and Slim and their romance. The romance was definitely there. They did feel something for each other. Of course, it was an explicit sex scene, you know, in the midst of the whole riot stuff. And I do feel like it was a lot about them being together in the moment and them making that first decision to do this together. And once, and they said, you know, me and you, you know, they didn't say it, but basically me and you, we're just going to, you know, be on the run and we're going to figure this out together. They basically, you know, found their person for the rest of their life. And I mean, it was a short life, the rest of their life, but they found their person. And so I do feel like this does really relate to real life, because it's been plenty of times, and I'm not saying it's not as dramatic as this, but it's been plenty of times where you could be, I don't know how you guys met your significant other, or if you never met a significant other, or if it was, you had love and you lost it, but it could be, you know, you cramming for a test with a guy, or you're cramming for a test with a girl, and you're in this together, and you feel that attraction, and you feel that spark, and you feel that y'all been through something together, and that's something that's small, but it could be that. Or I don't know, you know, you go through an accident with somebody. You might not know them from Adam, but you go through an accident with them and it brings you closer. And so I do feel like it's something that everybody has shared. It might not be, it could be, you know, with a friend, just a friend. It could be with a family member, and you can feel, oh my God, I went through this traumatic thing with my family member, and so I love them more. Like, it makes me have more love, more respect for them. It could be a friendship, or it could be a relationship. And so that's the reason why I really love Queen and Slim, because I really feel like it touched on a lot of different topics, but I feel like it also touched on how these two strangers, they bet their lives on each other. That's what they did. They put their lives in each other's hands, and they said, me and you are gonna do this. We have no, they decided they had no other choice. When, in my opinion, they did have other choices. They did not have to go on the run. I mean, I understand the, you know, how, you know, what the cops probably would have did, or the different things, but I do feel like her, as her being a lawyer, and her first, you know, a lot of people say, oh, well, she's being a lawyer, she decided to run. That's because she knows, you know, how it's gonna go down if they turn themselves in. And I understand that. But I do feel like most lawyers, it don't matter. I feel like most lawyers, they would have thought more, and they would have, you know, tried something else before they just said their first instinct was to go on the run. That's just me. But I do feel like Queen and Slim nonetheless was a great romance movie. Especially at the end, it was so sad when the black guy turned on them. And, you know, that's a whole nother conversation. I'll have to do a Queen and Slim review. And I know that movie has been out, but I still haven't did it. I have a lot of thoughts on that. But I do feel like at the end, it was really, really powerful. And it was really, really sad when, you know, she got shot. And then he picked her up. And then he got shot. And she flipped. But it was the most powerful moments in the movie. The first one is when they were taking the pictures of them on the car. And I do feel like it was just, I don't know, it was just one of those moments when you look at old pictures of, like, maybe musicians, or, you know, pictures of if you're looking at your grandmother's old black and white pictures, or you're looking at, you know, your dad, or your, you know, great, great, great grandma, you know, whoever, marriage pictures. And I feel like every black person, and this is every person in general, but especially black people, I have the feeling when I'm looking at old, you know, pictures of my family, or pictures of famous people, or whatever, and I'm just like, I'm really just thinking, I'm just like, you know, this is just crazy. This is, I feel nostalgic. I feel, you know, so many emotions, a rush of emotions. So that's the first one. And the second one was at the end before she got shot. And I forgot what he, I forgot what she said. I think she said, "I'll never let go of your hand." I don't want, I've only watched that movie once. I think that's what she said. And he said, "I would have kissed all your scars," or something like that. Or, "I would have healed all your scars." And that, those two lines, and I know it was like the ending and it was so emotional and it was so dramatic, but those two lines, when they said that to each other, that just, to me, that just like sealed the deal. Like, it made me tear up. And then I started laughing when she flipped on top of him. I know y'all, I'm a horrible person. Okay, to number five. Number five is Boomerang. Oh my God, I love this movie. Boomerang is, of course, it has Eddie Murphy in it. It has Halle Berry. It has Robin Givens. It has Martin Lawrence. And what's that guy's name? I just seen him. Anyways, it's another guy. Y'all know him. He's off of a lot of things. But anyways, so oh, and also has Tisha Campbell in it. So basically, Boomerang to me is a great, great love movie. And I put it as number five because I feel like it just shows how friendship is the root of the best relationships. It's just so, so, so wonderful. And for me, it's like, I feel like it really shows how somebody can really change their aspect. And, you know, Eddie Murphy, he was a player, but he wasn't a regular player. He was a player that was, you know, like he said, he said he's all flowers, he's all smiles, he's all dinners, all candles and all that stuff, until, you know, he has sex with a woman and then he loses interest. And his defense is that he just haven't found the woman for him. And when he finds Robin Givens, and she's just like him, she is career driven, she is very confident, she's ambitious, she's everything that he's ever wanted, and she's very smart, she's very beautiful, and she has nice feet. That was his thing. He wanted somebody who had nice feet, and he felt hard for her, but she didn't reciprocate. But on the other hand, Halle Berry, who is career driven, is very nice, but she's a people person. She's not all about me. When he finds her and their friends and she picks him up when he's low, he ends up start thinking about her. And then they end up becoming romantically involved. And then, you know, that whole thing spirals out of control. But then here comes Robin Givens again when he gets himself back in order. And then so now he's stuck between, you know, the idealistic girl that he, you know, thought he loved, you know, rather than his friend turned, you know, relationship or whatever, situationship girl, who is very sweet, down to earth, is equally beautiful, and is just has a natural personality and just a natural spark and, a, you know, just a caring person. And he ultimately, you know, realized that he was in love with Halle Berry and not Robin Givens. And I do feel like it's really hard to explain, but I do feel like everybody, all the love stories sort of go this way. You know, somebody is searching for somebody, they end up finding the perfect person, and then they end up ending up with the person that they never thought they would be with. And that's short term, you know, how Boomerang is set up. And for me, when I watch movies and when I analyze movies and stuff, I'm like, what was the problem with all these other women? Another girl, I always forget her name. She was in there too. She was in there too, and she was one of the girls that he was talking to or whatever. And she didn't have pretty feet, and so that was the reason why he stopped talking to her or whatever. But that was just, you know, a reason. That was just one of the reasons. But my thing is, I always think about why is somebody the love of your life and why is the other person not? And are your reasons valid? You know, are the feelings real, or is it just your mind talking? Are the feelings really there? Are the feelings there? Are the emotions there? Or is it just your mind telling you this person is right for you? And the girl's name was Lila. Hopefully I said that right. Rochin. She's off a lot of things. She was one of the girls that, you know, he had sex with or whatever, you know, was one of his little quote unquote little girlfriends or whatever, and he didn't want to be with her, but she seemed equally driven. She was equally as beautiful. She was seemed like a good person. And so I feel like a lot of times it's about choices, the choices you make, the judgments you make. Is this person a good person? Is this person smart? Is this person career driven? Does this person have a house? Does this person have a car? What is important to you? And I feel like a lot of times our friends, you know, we bounce things off of our friends, and sometimes our friends have completely different views than us. So Martin Lawrence and what was his name? David Allen Greer, he had, you know, they both had their own different views, you know, opposed to Eddie Murphy. Martin Lawrence was, he was a player, but he was a player that didn't really get any girls because he was just, you know, just the very rough around the edges sort of, you know, not, I guess technically now we would call him, he wasn't hood because he was a professional guy, but he had the hood mentality, you know, call him bitches, you know, no romance, just straight game and stuff like that. And David, the one who played Gerard, he was sort of just, you know, he was to me like the male version of Halle Berry, but just more boring. He was just very simple and very, you know, he wanted the emotional connection and all that stuff like that. And so I feel like a lot of times, you know, when you're talking to your friends and you're bouncing ideas, oh, I like this guy, but he didn't have this or he didn't have that. You know, your friends can be in a totally different position than you. And so it really ends up to who do you love? What will you do to really find the one and stick with the one you love? And at the end, when Halle Berry, she ended up quitting the job she was at, and so she ended up getting a new job, and she was like a creative director or whatever, and she created like a line for a fragrance, and it was like, when you know the one you love, or yeah, when you, I think it was a, when you know the one you love, that was the line. And it was basically, you know, just talking about, you have the power to determine who you love. Who are you going to love? Why do you love them? You know, it's a lot of beautiful women out here. It's a lot of sexy guys out here. It's a lot of intelligent men and women. It's, you know, a lot of people have a lot of great characteristics out here. But why is the person you choose to love different from the rest? You know? And so I feel like that's what Boomerang really taught us. It taught us about determining who you love, sticking with it, and really, really looking at yourself and thinking, even though this person is not who I plan or not who I picture myself with, can I live without them? You know? And I mean, that's the best way to figure out if you really are in love with somebody. Try to live without them. And if you can live without them, if you can succeed without them, if you can be without them, and not think about them and not get sad and not, you know, plan your life with them and not think about all your plans and your house and your kids with them, then I mean, what doesn't kill you make you stronger. You can live without them. But if you are with somebody, if you're thinking about somebody constantly 24/7 when you're not with them and things like that, and you are acting outside of yourself, I'm sorry to tell you, but you're in love. So you better try to make it work. Number four is, y'all, oh, I gotta breathe when I'm thinking about this movie. What was that? Yo, y'all better, I'm gonna have to cut that out later. Anyways, so number four is Just Right. Oh my God, I love this movie. Just Right has Queen Latifah and Common in it. Oh my God, like those two together, I would never in my life picture those two together. But those two in this movie work. And it also had, what's Dum Dum's name? What is Dum Dum's name? Yeah, I really do tell you, I really do think I have amnesia, because Paula Patton, and it has her dumb ass in it. Why did I just call her dumb? I love her. She's a great, sidebar. I love the actress. I love the actress. It's just, I feel like a lot of times they only place her in dumb, dumb characters, and I don't like that. I mean, I know certain people play dumb, dumb characters, but like Erica Hubbard, she's somebody who a lot of times played dumb, dumb characters. And it's okay if that's, you know, she's getting paid. I'm glad, you know, she's getting her roles. But I do wish that these great actresses and some of these great actors can get more diversity and diverse roles. Because if you're a great actress and a great actor, you can play versatile characters. And I hate when I see the same people in the same type of roles. So anyways, Just Right, you know, is a great, great movie. And to me, it's basically... it's sort of, to me, sort of like Boomerang, and it's just an amplified version. Somebody who, you know, you thought you would be with, somebody who, you know, was supposedly there for you in the beginning, or somebody who was there when things were up, and then versus somebody who was there no matter what, who was there pushing you, there with you, there through the ups and downs. Now, everybody might not be a physical therapist. And so I'm not saying that you have to, if you're not a physical therapist and your man's a basketball player, you know, you have to go start rubbing his damn thigh, you know, or his knee to get it back for him to be able to make the winning shot, you know, for him to, you know, to realize that he loves you. I'm not trying to say that. What I'm trying to say is that you can be there for somebody even if you technically can't be there for somebody. So if my guy's a basketball player, or heck, if he's a football player, I don't care, whatever he is, or if he's a math guy, if he like doing math problems, I don't know, I don't care. But basically what I'm saying is that you can be there for somebody by listening, by supporting them, by helping them in any way you can. You don't always have to have the solution to be there. But the problem with Paula Patton's character is that she wasn't with him for the right reasons. She was there with him because she wanted to be famous. She wanted to be a celebrity's wife. She wanted the handbags and the after parties. That's what she wanted. But on the other hand, her cousin, which was Queen Latifah, she was there because she really believed in him. Not his money, not the clout or the fame that came with it, but she believed in him. She loved basketball. They had so much in common. They could joke for hours. She had a great personality. Their personalities matched a lot. And sometimes you can have the best intentions in the world with somebody, but if your personalities don't match, if y'all have nothing in common, if only thing he thinks about is basketball and you don't even like basketball, you think basketball is, you know, is stupid, a lot of sweaty guys running up and down the court or whatever, and that's what, how you feel, I'm not saying that y'all can't be together. I'm just saying that that is something that can take a toll in your relationship. Because if all I care about is basketball and you have no interest in basketball, that's not going to help. That's not going to help me feel more connected to you. That's not going to want me to open up to you. Blahzy, blahzy, blahzy. But to me, I felt like Just Right was such a great movie because I'm glad that they chose a character that wasn't, you know, the status quo or the norm for beauty or the norm for the person who gets the guy in the end. And I'm glad that they didn't take it overboard and did somebody who, because Queen Latifah to me is very, very beautiful. She is very beautiful. So I'm tired of everybody always making it seem like, you know, Queen Latifah was somebody that could never get a guy like Common or Scott. That was the character he played, or Scott, because she could. I'm not trying to say that. I'm just saying I'm glad that they chose somebody that wasn't, you know, and that was, you know, in the story. It was supposed to be somebody who wasn't, you know, what everybody thought, the norm or this, you know, status quo of what a basketball's wife or a basketball's girlfriend would look like. And she was somebody who wanted to wear a jersey to the basketball game. She was somebody who wasn't focused on, all these appearances and just, you know, the superficial things, you know. And I feel like if Just Right really did take basic lessons and basic situations and just really just blew them out the park. Because if you think about it in Disney Channel movies, if you think about it in sort of like in Cinderella movies or Yeah, and like let's take Cinderella. Cinderella is this person who doesn't, you know, who is treated badly by a lot of people, who's looked down upon. You know, she doesn't have the best clothes, and her stepsisters, you know, get everything, and their, you know, her stepmothers always put her stepsisters out on the front, and they get, you know, they're seen by the public, and she's just always in the background, and she's always just, you know, she's seeing all this bad stuff happening, and she doesn't act on it. She just does what she needs to do. And then, poof, one day she ends up meeting the prince, okay? And, you know, she helps him, or she dances with him, sort of like in Just Right. She helps him out and stuff like that with the gas thing. He ends up becoming friends, or, you know, whatever. And then he ends up falling in love with her and try to chase her down and fight for her love. So that's basically the same thing that happens here. Scotty, which was Common, basically fought for Queen Latifah not because she was a second option, but because she was his only option. She was the person who got him, who understood him, who pushed him, who was there for him when nobody else was, who he could talk to, who he was attracted to. Everything. She had everything that he ever thought about. And Paula Patton had none of it except the looks, except it seemed like they had good conversation, in the B-roll when they were out, you know, walking, and they were with his friends and this, that, and that. But that stuff was probably more likely superficial, because she did not care about anything but who he was, you know, not who he was in the inside, but who he was in the outside. So that's why I love. Okay, so number three is Diary of a Mad Black Woman. Okay, y'all, I love this movie. I know every single line. Me and my sisters, we be reenacting it all the time, and we be saying some of like the famous lines from it and stuff like that. It's so funny. But I put Diary of a Mad Black Woman as number three because I feel like this movie like really showcases a lot of the stuff, a lot of the issues, with relationships and with women, not with women internally, but I feel like it shows a lot of things women go through that a lot of times men don't realize, and a lot of times women are subjected, and they feel responsible, and not only women but in general, but mainly women feel responsible to abusive exes. And a lot of people were like, oh wait, Charles wasn't abusive to Helen. He was emotionally and mentally abusive to Helen. And then not only that, he was sort of physically, because he literally dragged her out her house. And I feel like the relationship that she had, Helen and Charles, you could just see the difference between Helen and Charles and Helen and Orlando. Helen and Charles was so like cold. It was no love. It was no smiles. It was no dreams. It was nothing. But Helen and Orlando, even though they seemingly had less, it wasn't about the materialistic things. It was about how they made each other feel. Orlando was very, very in touch with his feminine side. And a lot of times people, they get this confused when I mean that. A lot of times, is he gay? Is he bisexual? When I mean that, just because a man is in touch with his feminine side doesn't mean he's not a man. I feel like a lot of people need to get that straight. No, he was 100% a man. He was 100%, well, I mean, gay men are men too. He was 100% straight. He was, what I mean by this, I mean that he was connected to her. He was able to connect with her. He was able to make her feel loved and safe and heard. Not only, you know, roaring and, you know, being over, you know, overly masculine and yelling and stuff like that. That for me does not do anything for me. And a lot of women, it doesn't do a lot of things for a lot of women. But Orlando actually showed her how to love again. And he really, really took it back to the basics of love. You know, he fell in love with her, and he was there for her through everything. And she finally was happy with him until Charles got shot, and she felt obligated to go back to Charles and help him, you know, with, you know, get himself situated. But also she was, you know, getting revenge out on him, and she ended up choosing him over Orlando temporarily. And then at the end, she said, no, she said, I deserve to be happy. And she said, I forgive you for everything you've done to me, Charles, but I don't love you. I'm not in love with you. I'm in love with Orlando. And so she went back to Orlando. Now, of course, it's very more detailed and very more in depth than that. But basically, it's really simple. You never know what you have until it's gone. And even the people that you think are there for you, a lot of people will, you know, they're never there for you. Sort of like Charles, the woman that he left Helen for, she ended up after his surgery, she ended up leaving him, taking the kid and his money. And end up leaving him. And so he had nothing. He had no friends. He had no, you know, he didn't have no money. He didn't have anybody. He just had Helen, the person that he dragged out of the house. That's the only person that he had. And so I really do feel like this movie very, like, shows you how to appreciate the love that you have and to not feel like you're so invincible. He felt like nothing could ever touch him. He felt like he was, you know, the most unstoppable man in the world, and that none of his bad things would catch up to him. Well, they did. And at the end, he didn't have the fairy tale. He was able to live, but he wasn't going to live with Helen because she has moved on. Another aspect or another relationship in Diary of Mad Black Woman was also, what's his name? Tyler Perry's character, and Deborah. Why am I forgetting? Yeah, but Tyler Perry's character and Deborah's character, which were Deborah was a church girl, whatever, and she was Helen's best friend. Brian, that's his name. I'm acting so damn dumb. But anyways, Brian and Deborah's character, Deborah, which was Helen's best friend growing up, you know, she was a church girl. She used to sing in the choir and she ended up getting hooked on drugs. And so now she's a junkie and Brian is still in love with her. And they have two children together, and he is so scared that his daughter will become like his wife. So he ends up, you know, just not letting his daughter sing, and he turns her away. He's not really helping her a lot. And it's revealed that he has helped her in the past, but he just doesn't know what to do. He doesn't want to let her in his life again, and then she does the exact things that she used to do. So basically, it also shows how can you help somebody who desperately needs help, but and you love them, but they're hard to reach. And I feel like it showed that she had to do it herself. He could help her as much as she wanted, but if she didn't want to change, then she wouldn't change. But she changed on her own. It showed her going into the detox program, and she's having the shakes, and she's getting all that crap out of her system. And at the end, they were all the better for it. They could move on. They could get over it. They could become a family again. And it shows that just because somebody may become something that you don't recognize or does something that you don't think is right doesn't mean that the love goes away. You can still love them very much, and you can still want the best for them. But a lot of times they have to put the initiative, and they have to show that they want to change for the family, for you, for them, for themselves especially. But I really, back to Helen and Orlando, they really, their relationship was very, very beautiful, because it just showed how there's always somebody for you, and you God can bring you out of a situation where you are depressed, where you are sad, where you are lonely, where you don't know how you got there, and he can put you in a new situation that's exactly the opposite, with somebody who was made for you, who knows you, who understands you, who would do whatever you can. So I really just feel like Diary of a Mad Black Woman was a very great example of how you don't accept something that you don't deserve. And when you're finally tired of accepting crap, you can turn the other cheek. And just because in the moment it might not seem that there's somebody out there for you, there is somebody out there for you. And that's what Diary of a Mad Black Woman taught me. And it also taught me about forgiveness. You have to forgive the people who have wronged you in your life. Like Medea said, or was it Medea or was it Cicely? She said that if you don't forgive them, they will keep the power. But if you forgive them, you take back the power, and it, you know, they won't have a hold over you anymore. And that's what she did. She forgave Charles, and she had no ill will to him, but she didn't love him anymore. She was in love with Orlando, the person who taught her how to love again and taught her how to trust again and taught her how to be free and to fall so deeply in love. And so that's what I love about Diary of a Mad Black Woman, because it gives you hope. Number two, y'all, I don't want to hear no crap about my number two, okay? No crap. Number two is Moonlight, okay? I love Moonlight. Me and my sister, Yakira, we love Moonlight. My oldest sister, Stephanie, does not like that movie. She doesn't like it for her own reasons, but me and my sister, Yakira, we love that movie. And I love that movie mainly because it just... Now, while it is a romance movie, and I know y'all probably like, that's not even really a romance movie. It is a romance movie, for one. For two, it really just, it captivates. And I feel like it's so minimalistic. I feel like it talks about one person over his period of life. And it really just shows how people can change, how they can become they can change artificially, they can change for real, they can grow, they can stay the same, they can cover up, they can hide, but it's always going to be certain people that will know you, no matter what facade you put up, no matter what guard you put up. It's going to be certain people that can see right through it, and no matter what you say, you can't fake it with them. And so Chiron, which was the character whose life was explored in the film, basically, you know, growing up, he was very different. He didn't have his father wasn't in the film, so I guess the viewers assumed that he didn't have a father. His father was nowhere to be found, and his mother at the beginning of the film was seemingly a great mother. Let me take that back. She was seemingly a good mother, but you could tell slowly she didn't really towards, you know, even in the beginning she had issues. She was addicted to drugs, so she does drugs, and she wasn't there for her son like she needed to be. Chiron was very he got bullied, he got chased. At the beginning of the film, it showed him getting chased through, you know, dirt, you know, crack houses and boarded up buildings and stuff. And his mentor, Juan, helped him, you know, basically, you know, helped him become the man that he is, and sort of just mold him and just, you know, explain to him and answer all his questions, the questions that his mother obviously knew that he had, but didn't really have any interest in really trying to help him understand what was really going on in his life and why this was happening, and just really sort of understand who he was, because she was too busy, like I said, with the drugs. It was another aspect, because Juan was a drug dealer and he was Chiron's mother's supplier. And so that was a whole nother aspect of it. And it also, so it also comes with self-identity. Who do you identify with? Who are you? Do you let people tell you who you are? Is what people telling you who you are, is that true? Or is it not true? And can you change it if it is true? And it just comes up with a lot of questions. And the reason why I love Moonlight is because it's a lot of things that are not said, but that are shown. I love when you can feel a character's despair, when you can feel a character's confusion, or when you can feel a character's sadness. But it's not always through dialogue. It's through their actions, it's through their looks, it's through their body language. And this movie was probably the movie to set the record on doing that. And so basically the movie showed Chiron as a child, a teenager, and as an adult. And basically it showed how he is gay. He was confused. And I don't mean confused by gay and straight. I mean that he didn't know what to make of his sexuality, because there was nobody really there to help him understand it except for Juan and Juan's girlfriend. it was nobody really there to really help him understand. His mother wasn't there for him. And especially when you're going through a confusing time of your life. And for Chiron, his whole life was very confusing. In the movie, it seemed like he was always in turmoil with himself. But when you're going through a confusing time and your family, your mom, who was supposed to be there to help you, to nurture you, to answer all your questions, really was not there for you, it's really hard for you to feel... It's really hard for you to not place blame on yourself. And that's what he did. He blamed himself and, you know, he blamed that it was his sexuality. Like, if it wasn't for me being gay, I need to be more hard. I need to be more tough. I need to be... And so, in the middle of this movie, in the teenagers section, it showed him having... engaging in a sexual activity with his friend Kevin, which was there even when he was younger. And, it showed the dynamic of Kevin as well, how Kevin is wants to be a pleaser and he wants to be liked and he wants, you know, he's succumbed to peer pressure and stuff like that. But he really does feel for Chiron. He really does like Chiron as a friend and as maybe more. And so basically it really showed that dynamic, and it also showed that sometimes that is not enough to stop people from succumbing to peer pressure and stop the cycle of abuse that was happening to and bullying that was happening to Chiron. And so basically Chiron, after beaten down physically, emotionally, mentally, and just tired of his situation, Juan is gone. He has Teresa, but you know, it's only so much she can do. His mom does not show any care for him. She's stuck on the drug. So basically he has nothing else. He finally decides to do something about it. So he beats up the guy who is responsible for a lot of this torment. And he is sent away to juvie or jail, whatever. And then so in the third section, we see him early to mid 20s. And basically he is basically... a new person. He's built himself from the ground up. He's doing what Juan did. He's a drug dealer or, you know, something of the sort. And basically it just shows him coming to terms with what he had to do to get out of the situation that he was in. And I feel like it was more mentally than it was physically. I feel like, you know, it's this new person, you know, he's bigger, he has muscles, he's somebody that nobody wants to mess with, just like Juan was. But I feel like it was more for him in the inside to say, I'm not that boy anymore. You can't push me around. And it has an emotional conversation with him and his mother. I love that conversation when she's like, she said, your heart don't gotta be black like mine, baby. And that part just like made me break down in tears. And so, girl, I'm about to cry right now. And so that is very, very emotional for me. And then it also at the end shows him reconnecting with Kevin, who has his own issues and has his own problems and has a little family of his own, which includes a son and a baby mama. They're not together, but I feel like it also re-explores at the end, it re-explored his sexuality. And I feel like it also showed that Kevin and his mom were the two people that he could not fake in front of. No matter, you know, who he reinvented himself as, no matter, you know, if you know what he does now or what kind of car he has grills in, he seems so hard on the outside. Kevin and his mom were the two people that got to him and said, I know you, and you are not this person, and I see through it. And so it also it touched on, you know, sexuality again at the end. And Kevin and Chiron were sitting together like they was when they were teenagers and they were engaged in the sexual activity. Now you don't see any sexual activity, but you just see Chiron laying on Kevin's shoulder, sort of like he was before. And to me, I don't know what was going on, but I do feel like it was more of an emotional type thing where he's saying, you know, you can just lay it down now. You can just lay everything down now. Like, it's okay. I'm here for you. I'm grown up now. And I know that I should have been there for you. And I'm going to be here for you now. Now that I'm, you know, now that he doesn't care about what everybody else think. And I don't know if a lot of people question if a man has, you know, relations with the female and he has relations with the male, but he ends up having a son or a daughter with the female, but you can tell that he's having relations with men as well. Is he gay? Is he bisexual? Is he straight? What is he? And I do feel like this was also a coming to terms with Kevin and his sexuality as well, not only Chiron. This movie, like, touched a lot of bases, and it did it flawlessly, and I do feel like it just drew so much emotion. And for a black straight female, this is something that a lot of people could not connect with. Like, I know a lot of people that I've talked to about the movie, they said, oh, I can't connect with that, I don't understand, like, it's about, you know, gay people, I'm not gay, or I've never been in his situation. But that's all movies. A lot of movies, you've never been in that situation, but if it touches you, it really touched me. And that's why it's number two. And I was going to put it as number one, but I said I got to say that for my all-time favorite. But Moonlight will always be, like, that movie. And I watch it all the time, and I will continue to watch it. So if you have not seen Moonlight, you need to watch it. It's still on Netflix, or you could probably find it online. It's a great, great movie. And it has won awards, and it's just so great. Okay, so we're finally down to number one. Number one. This is the top black romance movie. I want you guys to just, I'm just going to pause for a second. And I want you guys to think about, what movie am I about to say? What is number one? I want to do like a little, I want to see, I'm going to find like a little heartbeat. Doom, doom. Doom, doom. Doom, doom. Doom, doom. And I want you just to think, what movie could it be? What movie could it be? I'm teasing y'all. I really want you just to ponder on it. Think about black romance movies, and what movie could it be? And a lot of y'all are going to be like, this movie does not compare to the other movies. And it doesn't. It's very unique. But for me, it's non-negotiable. So number one, drum roll please, is Love and Basketball. Who got it right? Who knew it was Love and Basketball? Yes, it's Love and Basketball. I love Love and Basketball. Of course, I grew up on it. I used to watch it all the time. But it wasn't until, when did I actually really, like I really understood it? I think it was when I was either a junior or I was a senior in high school. Yeah, I think it was then, and I was watching it. I started crying. Like, it really got to me. I used to watch it all the time growing up, but it really got to me now that I was older, and now that I haven't really experienced nothing like that before. But I feel like it was because I started crying, because it was like, I want to experience that. Not the tragic parts, not the sad parts, but, you know, they say it's better to love and loss than never to love at all. And I really want that. I feel like everybody should aspire to that. Not the lost part, but loving, you know, having a great love. But the reason why Love and Basketball is number one is because it just explores how there is somebody for you, and you can have a connection like no other. And it's just, I don't even know how to explain it. I feel like it's so great because these two people, was Monica and Quincy, they were, you know, they loved each other even since when they were kids. They loved each other. Grew up next door, they loved each other. And, you know, they end up hating each other, of course, how it goes. And then in high school, they end up having their own issues. They end up having, you know, they both love basketball. It's easier for Quincy than it is for Monica. She has to conform to how a lady should act. And he's getting pats on the back because his father was a professional basketball player, or is a professional basketball player. And so basically it's, you know, it's a competition, it's a rival, it's all this stuff. And it's also support. It's a little bit supports in there as well. And then at during prom and high school, they end up, you know, revealing that they're going to the same college and stuff like that. And it's the perfect moment for them. And they finally just, you know, they don't really say it, but if they finally just succumb to them knowing that they have loved each other ever since they were kids. And I feel like that's something that everybody wants. I don't care how long you've been married or how long you known your person. And people say, oh, I know my man since diapers. Like, that, to me, that is I can't go back into diapers right now, but like, I can't go back to when I was young, but that's something that everybody wants. Like, whenever you hear a story about somebody meeting somebody and they were 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 or 12 years old and they loved each other ever since then, like, it's just crazy. Or even somebody who is 40 years old and they love their person since they were 19, whatever. Whenever you have a long love, like, that is just crazy to me. And so now at this point, they confess their love to each other, and more physically than verbally, they have sex and stuff like that. And I mean, I do not like those two words, make love. I hate those two words, y'all. I don't even want to get into that right now, but I guess that's what they did, because I don't want to sound so like plain, like, you know, they connect with each other. So basically, fast forward, they go to college and they just love each other and stuff like that, and they're having a good time and they're just experience the college life with each other. And like I said, in this, at first, it's more difficult for Sanan than it is for Omar Epps. It's very more difficult, very much more difficult. You know, she's having to prove herself more. She has her coach on her back. She just has so much stuff going on. And he has his own stuff going on too, but up until this point, everything has been more easier for Quincy. So long story short, she ends up... So basically, loving basketball just like symbolized how two people can be in love with each other. Two people can love each other. However, like, little things, life events can tear them apart. People can need different things at different times. And, you know, if you're not there for them, you know, they can, you know, that could be a sign of, you know, not betrayal, but it can break people apart. So, for example, while Sanaa was finally getting herself on track in college, you know, with basketball, and was finally, you know, all her hard work was finally paying off, this whole situation with Quincy's family happened, where his dad, you know, was found cheating on his cheating on Quincy's mother and stuff like that. And so now Quincy wanted to talk, and now he is confused. His whole world is rocked upside down, and the only thing he needs is Sanaa to be there for him. But now Sanaa's stuck in a hard place because she needs to make curfew, and she is focused on her career, which has been so easy for Quincy. And so it's like, you know, he felt like she wasn't there for him and this, that, and the third. And so that breaks them up and all this other stuff. And basically, it just shows that, you know, at different times in our lives, we each need something different, and how sometimes that can conflict. What I need might not be the same thing as what my boyfriend needs. And while I'm dealing with my stuff, he could be waiting on me to help him deal with his stuff. And so it's all about choices that you make, and, you know, how are you there for each other? And this situation could have gone way differently. It didn't have to break them apart, but it did. They chose to let it break them apart. And so they end up just doing, you know, themselves, doing, he did him and she did her, and they, you know, were on opposite sides of the world at different times. She went overseas and played basketball. He dropped out of college or whatever. He went pro. He ended up hurting his knee. He ended up getting engaged, and she comes back, and this, that, and the third. And so she ends up, you know, finally confessing her love to him, and, you know, went 2 weeks before his wedding or something like that. And so basically, you know, he had to decide, am I going to be with the woman that I've always loved, or am I going to stay with the woman who I guess I've learned to love, which is Tyra Banks? And so he ends up choosing, you know, after it's all said and done, after all the dramatics were over, he ended up choosing Sanaa Lathan, the woman he's always loved. And then they end up having a daughter, and we didn't see him playing basketball. He was just there supporting Sanaa Lathan playing basketball, because earlier she realized that it wasn't really fun anymore because she wasn't with him. Her favorite thing about basketball was, you know, being with him and, you know, just being together and like reminiscing on all the things that they did and the, you know, the times that they had. It just wasn't fun anymore, just doing it by herself and not having, you know, his support and, you know, just not being with the person she fell in love with because of basketball. And so she was willing to quit it, and so she was willing to just hang it up and just do, you know, what her dad did, something with business. And, you know, she finally realized that if she had him, she would love basketball again. And she finally got him, and she ended up loving basketball again, and she had a family. And to me, that was just one of the most, like, moments that just, like, aha, like, I feel like this movie really spoke to me, because it showed once when you have the person you love, nothing else sort of really matters. Everything else sort of falls in place. And I feel like that's the problem with a lot of people. A lot of people, they have everything but the person, that the right person. Once you have the right person, everything else will fall in place. If you don't have the right person, you will waste your time, or not waste your time. You can do other things. You can occupy your time, but it won't be the same as if you had the right person for you. And while everybody has somebody out there that's for us, so you just got to find them. And no matter when you find them in life, but you have to find them, and you have to hold on to them. So these were my top 10 black movies. I want to hear what you guys think, and what are your top 10 black movies? Or if you have anything, comments, concerns, questions, you can add me. Make sure you guys stay tuned for more content. I'm going to try to post more. And I want to challenge you all to watch all 10 of these movies during this quarantine. I know some states are over, like some people are free. But yeah, you know, you still got time. Watch all 10 of these movies at some point over the summer. And I want you just to think about what I said and see if you see something different, or if you see the same thing that I saw. So thank you. Stay blessed and stay safe. Bye.